people whirred around the room, giving commands and checking notes. I heard Josie laugh, and someone shushed her immediately after. The boys talked to one another, all a little too loud to be considered appropriate. Baden was sulking next to Henry, ignoring everyone, and I pressed my hands to my stomach, calming myself. Next to Henry, just off stage in the dark, I saw a waving hand. It was Eric, standing on the sideline, waiting to take his hidden seat. Once he had my attention, he gave me a thumbs up, but the expression on his face let me know it was a question. I shrugged. He pressed his lips together, then mouthed the word, sorry. I gave him a tight smile and a thumbs up back, which wasn't quite right, but was the only thing I could do. Eric shook his head at me, and I was strangely comforted. At least someone seemed to understand how I was feeling. Taking a deep breath, I went over to sit between Mom and Aaron. Something's wrong, I whispered to him.
I know.
Do you know what it is?
Yes.
Will you tell me?
Later.
I sighed. How was I supposed to perform with worry hanging over my head? The updates were dispensed, and Daddy spoke briefly, though I couldn't concentrate on anything he was saying. All I could see were the lines of stress around his eyes, the way his shoulders wore the strain of whatever was troubling him. Partway through, Gavril stepped toward the middle of the set and announced that he had a few questions for the selected, and I watched them all straighten their ties or cuffs and move into more assertive stances in their chairs.
So, let's see. Sir Ivan.
On the near side of the first row, Ivan raised his hand, and Gavril faced him.
How are you enjoying the selection so far?
He chuckled.
I'd be enjoying it more if I could manage to get to see the princess one-on-one.
Ivan winked at me, and I felt my face set on fire.
I imagine the princess has a hard time getting to everyone,
Gavril said graciously.
For sure. I'm not complaining. Just being hopeful,
he added, still chortling like this was all a joke.
Well, maybe you can impress her Royal Highness tonight and sway her into making time for you. Tell us, what do you think the most important job of a future prince would be?
Ivan's laughing stopped.
I don't know. I think just being good company is important. Princess Edelin is forced into lots of relationships for work, and I think it would be nice to be one of the people she always wanted to be around, just for, you know, fun.
I tried not to roll my eyes. You are a forced relationship, honey.
Interesting, Gavril commented. What about you, Sir Gunner?
Gunner was a bit on the short side, and he looked almost petite sitting beside the gangly Ivan. He tried to straighten himself, but it was no use.
I think any future prince should be prepared to be available. You've already mentioned the princess's busy schedule, so anyone in her life should try to put himself in a position to be helpful. Of course, I don't know what that looks like yet, but it's important to think of how your life and priorities might change.
Gavril made an approving face, and Dad clapped, which led others to follow. I joined in, but it felt strange. This was a legitimate question, and I wasn't sure I liked it being turned into entertainment.
Sir Kyle, you've lived in the palace your whole life, Gavril said, walking across the stage. How do you think your life might change were you to become prince?
I definitely need to focus more on my hygiene.
Huh.
I covered my mouth, so embarrassed, but I couldn't stop laughing.
Oh, sounds like someone over there agrees.
Behind Kyle, Henry belatedly joined in the laughter. Of course, he'd heard the comment on a delay. Gavril noticed him and moved back.
Sir Henry, yes?
Henry nodded, but I could see the pure terror in his eyes.
What's your opinion on all this? What do you think a future prince's most important role might be?
He tried not to let his fear show as he leaned to the side to hear Eric. Once he understood, he nodded.
Oh, yes. The prince should be for Princess M.
I stood. I couldn't bear it. Henry, I called. All eyes turned to me, and I waved him over to come join me in the middle of the set. He carefully came down from his seat. And Eric, you too. Henry waited for his friend to come around from behind the set. Eric looked nervous, not prepared to be in the spotlight. But Henry mumbled something to him with a smile, and he eased as they found their way with Gavril to the front. I linked my arm around Henry's, and Eric stood just behind him, going into shadow mode. Gavril, Sir Henry was raised in Swendway. His first language is Finnish, so he requires a translator. I motioned to Eric, who gave a quick bow, ready to go back into obscurity. I'm sure Henry would be happy to answer your question, but I think it would be much easier without Eric hiding behind the risers. Henry smiled as Eric conveyed all this to him, and I felt strangely proud when he reached across and gently squeezed my arm. Pausing to collect himself, Henry gave his answer. I could see he was thinking about his words, and even though he'd been thrown off, he was deliberate as he spoke. Finally, he came to a finish and all eyes fell on Eric. He says that any future prince should remember that it isn't simply one role to fill, but several. Husband, consultant, friend, and dozens more. He would need to be prepared to study and work as hard as Her Highness, and be ready to set his ego aside to serve. Eric put his hands behind his back, and I could see he was trying to remember the last of Henry's words. And he would also need to understand that there is a weight she carries, that he never could, and be ready to sometimes just be a clown. I giggled, happy to see Henry's huge smile when Eric was done. The entire room erupted in applause, and I got up on tiptoes to whisper in his ear. Good, good. He beamed.
Good, good?
I nodded.
Your Highness, this is an extraordinary complication in the selection process.
Gavril gasped.
How do you manage?
Right now with two things, patience and Eric. There was a smattering of laughter across the room.
But how could this work? At some point it would have to change.
This was the first time in my life that I'd ever wanted to run over, grab my chair, and fling it across the room at Gavril Fide. Yes, probably. But there are certainly worse things than a language barrier.
Could you give us some examples?
I motioned for Henry and Eric to go sit down, and worked very hard not to laugh at how quickly Eric moved. Henry gave me an affectionate smile as he left, and that inspired me.
Well, since this began with Henry, let me use him as an example. We have to work hard to communicate, but he's an incredibly kind person, whereas Jack and Burke spoke perfect English, but behaved rather poorly. Yes, we all saw the story of Burke's fight, and let me say, I'm happy to see you were unharmed by that outburst.
Uninjured, sure. Unharmed? That was questionable. But no one would want to hear about that. Yes, but they seem to be the exception, not the rule. There are so many candidates I could brag about.
Oh, well, don't let me stop you.
I smiled and peeked back to the boys. Sir Hale has incredible taste and works as a tailor. I would not be surprised to see all of Ilya covered in his designs one day.
I love that dress, he called.
I made it, I yelled back, unable to contain my pride.
Perfection.
See, I said, turning back to Gavril. Told you he had good taste. I looked around again. Of course, I've already mentioned Sir Baden's musical skills, but they're worth bringing up again. He's so talented. Baden gave a quick nod, and if he was still irritated, he was covering it well. Sir Henry, I've discovered, is an amazing cook, and it takes a lot to impress me in that department, because, as you know, the palace chefs could rival anyone in the world,
So trust me when I say you're jealous of me because I've gotten to taste his food. More laughter filled the studio, and I caught a glimpse of Dad in a monitor looking so, so delighted. Sir Fox. Now, some might not be aware of what a valuable skill this is, but he has the ability to make the best out of any situation. The selection can be stressful, and yet he is always looking at the bright side. He's a pleasure to be around. I shared a gaze with Fox, and even with the gash on his head and his bruised eye showing slightly through the makeup, he looked as far from menacing as possible. I was glad I'd let him stay.
Anyone else?
Gavril questioned, and I scanned the boys. Yes, there was one more. Most people have a hard time believing that I don't know Sir Kyle backward and forward, because we've lived in the same place our whole lives. But it's true. The selection has allowed me to get to know him much better, and I've now learned that he's a very promising architect. If we ever needed a second palace built, he's the first person I'd call. There were some sweet sighs around the room at the idea of childhood friends finally becoming possible lovers. Although, I can confirm he needs help in the hygiene department, I added, sending the room into laughs again.
It sounds like these are some truly amazing young men,
Gavril called, beginning another round of applause for them. Absolutely.
So, if you're so impressed, I have to ask, has anyone got a special place in your heart just yet?
I found myself fiddling with my hair. I don't know.
Oh-ho!
I giggled, looking down. This wasn't real, was it?
Does it happen to be anyone you mentioned?
I slapped his arm playfully. Oh my gosh, Gavril! He snickered, as did most of the room. I fanned myself with a hand and turned back to him. The truth is, it's still difficult to talk about this so publicly, but I'm hoping to have more to say in the future.
That's wonderful news, Your Highness. Let me join all of Ilia in wishing you luck as you look for your partner.
Thank you. I nodded my head modestly and casually peeked over at Dad. The expression on his face was one of disbelief, almost as if he was optimistic. It was bittersweet for me, to feel so unsure about the whole thing, but to see that even the slightest glimmer of possibility took so much worry out of his eyes. For now, that would be enough. Chapter 27.
It's bad.
I lay on Aaron's bed, curled in a ball while he sat upright, telling me everything Mom and Dad didn't want to.
Just say it. He swallowed. It always seems to start in the poorer provinces. They're not rebelling, not like when Mom and Dad were kids. It's more like they're uprising.
What does that mean exactly?
They're rallying to end the monarchy. No one is getting what they want out of the caste dissolution, and they think we don't care.
Don't care? I asked, astonished. Dad's running himself ragged at trying to fix it. I'm dating strangers for them.
I know, and I have no idea where that performance tonight came from, but that was spectacular.
I made a smart face, acknowledging the praise. But I was starting to question just how much of tonight was planned and how much was genuine.
But even then, what are we supposed to do? Perform forever?
Huh, I scoffed. As if you'd ever be asked to perform. It would always be me, and I can't. I feel like I'm suffocating as it is.
We could all step down, he suggested. But then what would happen? Who would take over? And if we don't step down, will they run us out?
Do you think they'd do that? I breathed. He stared into the distance.
I don't know, Edie. People have done far worse things when they're hungry or tired or unwaveringly poor.
But we can't feed everyone. We can't make everyone earn the same amount of money. What do they want from us?
Nothing, he said honestly. They just want more for themselves.
I can't say I blame them, but the people are confused. They think their lives are in our hands, but they're not.
They're in their own.
Exactly.
We sat in silence for a long time, considering what this meant for us. Truthfully, though, I knew it would hit me harder than anyone else if the people followed through on this. I didn't know how things like this happened, but governments changed. Kingdoms rose and fell. Entire ideologies took over, shoving others to the side. Could I be brushed into the gutter? I shivered, trying to imagine a life like that. They already threw food at me. I murmured.
What?
I've been so stupid, I answered, shaking my head. I've grown up believing that I was adored, but the people don't love me. Once Mom and Dad stepped down, I can't imagine there would be anything preventing the country from getting rid of me. It was a tangible thing, like I was being held aloft by this idea, and now that I knew it was a lie, my body felt heavier. Aaron's face grew worried. I waited for him to contradict me, but he couldn't.
You can make them love you, Edlin.
I'm not as charming as you, or as clever as Caden, or as adorably rambunctious as Austin. There's nothing that special about me. He whacked his head on his headboard as he groaned.
Edlin, you're joking, right? You're the first female heir. You're unlike anything this country has ever known. You just have to learn how to use that, to remind them who you are.
I'm Edlin Shreve, and no one in the world is as powerful as me. I don't think they'd like me if they knew who I really was.
If you're going to whine, I'll kick you out.
I'll have you flogged.
You've been threatening me with that since we were six.
One day it'll happen. Heed my warning. He chuckled.
Don't worry, Edie. The chances of people organizing enough to do anything are slim. They're venting. Once they get this out of their system, things will go back to normal. You'll see.
I nodded and sighed. Maybe I was fretting for nothing. But I could still hear the hateful yelling during the parade, and I could still see the hateful remarks from my kiss with Kyle. This certainly wouldn't be the last we heard about abolishing the monarchy. Don't tell Mom and Dad I know, okay?
If you insist.
I hopped up and kissed Aaron's cheek. I felt bad for girls who didn't have brothers. See you tomorrow. He grinned.
Get some sleep.
I left his room with every intention of going back to mine, but as I walked, I realized I was hungry. Now that I'd been to the kitchens, I kind of liked it down there. I remembered seeing some fruit, and there was cheese in the refrigerator. Certainly it was late enough that it couldn't bother anyone, so I trotted down the back stairs. I was wrong in assuming that it would be completely empty. There were a handful of young men and women rolling out dough and chopping vegetables. I took it all in for a moment, entranced by how efficient and driven they were. I loved that, in spite of the hour, they all seemed alert and happy, chatting with one another as they went about their work. They were so interesting that it took several moments for me to notice the head of floppy blonde curls in the back corner of the room. Henry had hung his shirt on a hook, and his blue undershirt was covered in flour. I moved quietly, but as the staff recognized me, they curtsied and bowed as I passed, alerting Henry to my presence. When he saw me, he tried to brush the mess off himself, failing completely. He pushed back his hair and turned to me, smiling as always. "No, Eric?"
"He sleep."
"Why aren't you asleep?" He squinted, trying to piece together the words.
Sorry, I cook?"
I nodded. "Can I cook too?" He pointed to the pile of apples and dough on the table.
"You want? You cook?"
"Yes." He beamed and nodded. Then, giving me a once-over, he paused before grabbing his dress shirt and wrapping it around me, tying the sleeves together in the back. An apron. He wanted me to have an apron. I smiled to myself. It was only a nightgown, after all. But there weren't enough words between the two of us to argue over it. He picked up an apple and took the peel off in one long strip. When he was done, he set it on the counter and picked up a different knife.
Vida vietsi nine,
he said, pointing to the way his fingers held the handle.
Vida omina huoli lesesti.
He turned his other hand into a claw, tucking his fingers away as he held the apple. Then he started cutting. Even with my inexperienced eyes, I could see how he was using the minimum amount of force to do his work, and how his simple stance protected his hands.
You?
He said, passing me the knife. Okay. Like this? I curled my hand up like he had.
Good, good.
I wasn't nearly as fast as he was, and my slices weren't half as uniform. But by the way he grinned, you'd have thought I made an entire feast by myself. He worked with the dough and mixed cinnamon and sugar, and prepped one of the fryers along the wall. I wondered if he was in charge of desserts at home, or if they were simply his favorite. I helped toss the apples and stuff the dough, and though I was terrified of the hot oil, I did sink one of the baskets. I squealed when the oil came alive, popping and dancing all over the place. Henry only laughed at me a little, which was kind. When he finally placed the tray in front of me, I was dying of hunger and nearly too excited to wait. But I did, and he gestured that I should try. So I plucked up one of the fritter donut pastry things and bit in. Oh, it was heaven. Even better than the rolls he'd made the other day.
Oh, yum,
I exclaimed as I chewed. He broke into a laugh and picked one up himself. He seemed pretty satisfied, but I could see in his eyes he was evaluating what he'd made. I thought they were perfect.
What are these called?
Hmm?
Name.
I pointed to the food.
Oh, omenolurtsi.
Omenolurtsi?
Good.
Yeah?
Good.
I smiled to myself. I'd have to tell Caden I was seriously mastering the names of several Swedish desserts. I ate too, feeling a little sick once I was done. And then I watched as Henry passed the plate around to the cooks, who all praised his skills. In the deepest core of myself, I hated that he didn't understand the words they were using. Delectable, flawless, perfection. I got the sense that if he had understood, he'd have said they were being too generous. It was hard to be sure, though. That was just my assumption about who he was. I really didn't know. And, I reminded myself, you don't want to. There were times when it was getting harder and harder to remember that. When Henry finished his rounds and the plate came back with hardly a crumb left, I gave him a shy smile. I should sleep.
You sleep?
Yes.
Good, good.
Tonight? The report? I asked, trying to keep things simple. He nodded.
Report, yes.
I placed my hand on his chest. You are so sweet.
Sweet. The sugar?
I laughed. Yes, like sugar. He brought his hand up to cover mine, as it was still pressed against his heart. His smile dwindled as he looked at me and swallowed. He shrugged as he held me there, seeming only to want to make the moment last. He held my hand for the longest time, and I could see he was sorting through words in his head, trying so, so hard to find one that he knew I might understand. But there was nothing. I wanted Henry to know that I saw what he felt. I could tell in every smile and every gesture that he really cared about me. And despite my best efforts, I cared about him, too. I worried about how much I would regret it, but there was only one way to express that feeling. I closed the distance between us and placed a hand on his cheek. He stared into my eyes as if he'd discovered something truly valuable, something rare that he might never see again. I nodded slowly, and he lowered his lips to mine. Henry was scared. I could feel it. He was afraid to touch me, afraid to hold me, afraid to move. I didn't know if it was because I was a princess, or because he'd never done this before. But that kiss was so vulnerable. That made me love it even more. I pressed my lips into his, trying to tell him without words that this was okay, that I wanted him to hold me. And finally, after a moment of hesitation, he responded. Henry held me like I was delicate, like if his grip was too tight, I'd crumble. And his kisses were the same way. Only now, instead of being driven by fear, they were motivated by what felt like reverence. It was an affection almost too beautiful to endure. I pulled away, slightly dizzy from the kiss, noting that his eyes looked pained, but he wore the tiniest smile. "I should go," I said again. He nodded. "Good night."
"Good night."
I moved slowly until I was out of his sight. Then I ran. My head was swimming with thoughts that I didn't understand. Why did it bother me so much when Gavril picked at Henry? Why did I have to keep Fox when he should have left? Why did Kyle, for goodness sake, Kyle, keep popping into my mind? And why was it so terrifying even to ask those questions? When I got to my room, I flung myself into bed, feeling disoriented. As angry as I was at Gavril for bringing it up, it did bother me that I couldn't speak to Henry, that I couldn't communicate anything intimate to him because of how uncomfortable it would be to go through Eric. As unnerved as the thought made me, if I was going to tell anyone something personal, it would probably be Henry. I felt safe around him, and I knew he was smart, and I admired his passion. Henry was good. But I didn't speak Finnish, and that was bad. I rolled over onto my back in frustration, yelping when something dug into my spine. Reaching around, I felt that it was a knot. I was still wearing Henry's shirt. I untied it, and despite how absurd it was, pulled it up to my nose. Of course, he smelled like cinnamon and honey and vanilla. Of course he smelled like dessert. Stupid Swedish baker with his stupid spices. Ah, this was making me asinine. This was why love was a terrible idea. It made you weak. And there was no one in the world as powerful as me. Chapter 28. At breakfast, I was struck by a number of things. First was Henry trying to catch Eric up on everything that had happened the night before. Eric's eyes kept darting over to mine, and then back to Henry. And he looked like he was trying to calm him down. I thought for sure Henry would be elated today, as the second person in the selection to get a kiss. Instead, he seemed frantic. Across from Henry, Kyle's confused gaze flipped back and forth between him and Eric, as he clearly didn't know enough words to follow even a fraction of the conversation. He slowly spooned food into his mouth, without trying to interject. I also noticed that Baden was trying to get my attention. He gave me a small wave and nodded toward the door. I mouthed, "Later," and did my best not to be irritated by him neglecting protocol again. But the worst by far were Mom and Dad surreptitiously peeking over at me, obviously wondering how much I knew about the uprising. I cleared my throat. "So, did I do okay last night?" Dad's face finally broke into a smile.
I was impressed, Edlin. After such a trying week, you were incredibly poised. When Henry got up there, and you were so generous with him, it was a wonderful thing to watch. And I'm happy to see that maybe some of them are appealing to you. Gives me hope.
We'll see where that goes, I hedged. But I did promise you 3 months, and I think it will take me at least that long to figure any of this out.
I know exactly what you mean, he said,
looking as if 1,000 memories were flooding his head.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I watched his sweet, wistful smile, and I could see how much this whole thing meant to him. Will you be disappointed? If I get to the end and there's no engagement?
No, dear. I won't be disappointed.
He only barely accented the word, but it sent me into a sudden tailspin of worry. What would it mean for me when I got to the end and was still single? If we weren't just dealing with post-caste confusion anymore, and trying to quell an outright rebellion, 3 months wasn't enough to fix this. In fact, 2 weeks had already disappeared in a rush. This wasn't going to be enough. And then I understood why they might want to keep any hint of unrest from me. If I thought this was completely pointless, would I quit? If I quit, then there really was nothing. Don't worry, Daddy, I said. It's all going to be fine. He put his hand over mine and gave it a squeeze.
I'm sure you're right, dear.
Then, taking a deep breath, he went back to his coffee.
I meant to tell you, the background checks are done. If we had made a few calls before the selection, we would have known that Burke had anger issues and that a girl at Jack's school reported him for inappropriate behavior once. It also turns out Ian spends almost all his time alone. I don't think that's anything worth sending him home for, but we should watch him.
Ian's actually been pretty generous.
Oh?
Yeah, but I have noticed he's a bit of a loner. Not sure why, though. He's a good conversationalist. Dad sipped his coffee and stared at Ian.
That's strange.
Anyone else I need to worry about? I asked, not wanting him to linger on Ian. Isolated didn't mean troublemaker.
There was one who had some bad grades, but nothing to kick up a fuss about.
All right, then. The worst has passed. I tried to look encouraging.
I certainly hope so. I'm going to have a special team continue to look into this. I wasn't as diligent as I should have been, and I'm sorry for that,
he confessed. But on the plus side, I could have actual dates to talk about next Friday. He chuckled to himself.
True. So, maybe give someone you haven't talked to yet a chance. I promise, it is actually possible to meet with all of them.
I surveyed the mass of boys. I might not be in the office this week. He shook his head.
Not a problem. Get to know them. I'm still pulling for you to find someone, even if part of you thinks it's pointless.
I might remind you, that wasn't your goal when you proposed this.
All the same.
There are just so many. Anyone you don't like? He squinted.
As a matter of fact.
Dad gazed over each of their faces, trying to find one in particular.
That one. Green shirt.
Black hair?
Yes.
That's Julian. What's wrong with him?
This might sound trivial, but when you were complimenting the others last night, he didn't smile or clap for any of them. Not a good attitude to have. If he can't stand being in their shadows temporarily, how would he handle being in yours for the rest of his life?
For all the mental time I spent debating how much he honestly believed in me as a leader, that statement made it all a waste. Of course he saw me as a leader.
And this might also sound trivial, but I don't think you'd make attractive children.
Daddy! I yelled, causing a bit of a stir. I buried my head in my hand as Dad doubled over in laughter.
I'm just saying.
All right, I'm leaving. Thanks for the insight. I practically bolted from the hall, though I made sure my pace was only slightly faster than what might be considered ladylike. Once I was alone, it turned into an all-out sprint. In my room, I filed through the remaining applications, looking for anything that might make one person more exciting than another. I paused on Julian's picture. Dad was right. No matter how I combined his nose and my eyes, or my mouth and his cheeks, every variation looked awful in my head. Not that it mattered. I'd send him home soon enough, but probably only once a few dates went bad and he had company. The solo eliminations had been rather awful. For now, I had to make a plan. 10 dates. That was the goal before I had to face another report. And I'd need to get at least 3 of them in the papers. How could I make them look magnificent? Mom was in the women's room with Miss Lucy, meeting with a mayor. There weren't very many ladies holding down those positions, so I knew them by heart. This was Mila Warren from Calgary, gracing our home today. I hadn't planned on making this an official visit, but now I had no choice. I curtsied, greeting Mom and her guest.
"Your Highness," Miss Warren sang, standing to give me a deep curtsy. "It's a pleasure to see you, and during such an exciting time."
"We're very happy to have you as well, ma'am. Please, sit."
"How are you, Edlin?"
Mom asked. "Good. I have some questions for you later," I added quietly.
"No doubt a little boy talk, eh?"
Ms. Warren asked with a wink. Mom and Miss Lucy indulged her with a laugh, but while I smiled, I thought she should know the truth. "I don't think the selection is quite what you imagine." She raised her eyebrows.
"Please, give me 35 men fighting over me any day."
"Honestly, it's more work than anything," I promised. "We make it look exciting, but it's challenging."
"I can back that up," Mom said. "No matter what side of the situation you're on, it's hard. There are long hours of nothing happening, followed by bursts of events."
She shook her head.
"Even now, just thinking back on it, I feel tired."
Mom rested her head on her hand and flicked her eyes toward me. There was something in her expression, that motherly, accepting look, that made me feel understood and comforted. But there was the same worry there, the hint of stress that Dad was wearing this morning. She brushed off the moment and focused on Ms. Warren.
"So, Mila, the last I heard, things were going well in Calgary."
"Oh, yes. Well, we're a quiet bunch." She'd stopped by on little more than a social call, and I sat there holding my perfect posture until she decided to leave, which only happened because I slipped a note to the maid asking that she come in and tell Mom she was needed urgently. The second Ms. Warren was out the door, Mom straightened her dress.
"Let me go see what this is all about."
"Relax. It's just me." I studied my nails. They needed some work. Mom and Miss Lucy stared. "I wanted to talk to you, and she wouldn't stop, so I made an appointment. Sort of." I flashed a cheeky smile. Mom shook her head.
"Edlin, sometimes you can be a little manipulative," she sighed, "and sometimes it's a gift. Ugh, I didn't think I could take much more."
I giggled conspiratorially with her and Miss Lucy, glad I wasn't alone.
"I feel bad for her," Mom said guiltily. "She doesn't get out much, and it's hard to do her job alone. But I didn't appreciate how she spoke to you."
I made a face. "I've had worse."
"True," she swallowed. "What did you need?"
I glanced at Miss Lucy. "Of course," she answered to my unspoken request. "I'm around all day if you need me." She curtsied to Mom, kissed me on my head, and left. It was such a tender gesture. "She's so good to me," I said,
The boys, too. Sometimes I feel like I ended up with several mothers. I smiled at Mom and she nodded. I kept the people I love close, and they have fawned over you since the moment they knew you were coming. I really wish she had children, I said sadly.
Me too,
Mom swallowed. I guess by now it's common knowledge that she's faced a long struggle with no success. I'd do nearly anything to be able to help her.
Have you tried?
I felt like there was little the Shreves couldn't accomplish. Mom blinked a few times, trying not to cry.
I shouldn't tell you this. It's private. But yes, I've done everything I could. I even went so far as to offer to be a surrogate and carry a baby for her.
She pressed her lips together. It was the one time I regretted being queen. It appears my body isn't always mine, and there are certain things I'm not allowed to do.
Says who? I demanded.
Everyone, Eaglin. It's not exactly a traditional thing to do, and our advisors thought that people would be upset by it. Some even argued that any baby I carried would have to be in line for the throne. It was ridiculous, so I had to let it go.
I was quiet for a minute, watching my mother recover from a heartbreak years old, and one that wasn't even her own in a way.
How do you do that?
What?
It's like you're always giving pieces of yourself away. How do you have anything left for you? I feel exhausted watching you sometimes.
She smiled. When you know who matters most to you, giving things up, even yourself, doesn't really feel like a sacrifice. There are a handful of people who I'd lay down my life for without a second thought. And then there are the people of Ilia, our subjects, who I lay my life down for in a different way.
She lowered her eyes and touched up her already immaculate dress.
You probably have people you'd sacrifice for and you don't know it, but you will one day.
For a second, I wondered if we were actually related. All the people she was thinking about, Dad, Aaron, Miss Lucy, Aunt May, were important to me, too. But mostly I needed them to help me, not the other way around.
Anyway, she said,
what was it that you needed?
Oh, so Dad has deemed that the remaining boys aren't complete lunatics, so I'm focusing on dates this week, I answered, leaning forward. I'm looking for ideas that would be easy but look great on camera.
Ah.
She lifted her eyes to the ceiling in thought.
I'm not sure how useful I can be in that department. Nearly all the dates I had with your father during my selection were walks around the garden.
Seriously? How did you two even get together? That's so boring.
She laughed.
Well, it gave us a lot of opportunities to talk. Or to argue. And the majority of our time spent with each other was filled with one or the other.
I squinted.
You guys fought? All the time.
For some reason, that brought a smile to her face.
Honestly, the more and more I hear about your selection, the less sense it makes. I can't even imagine you and Dad fighting.
I know. There were a lot of things we needed to work through. And truthfully, we liked having someone who'd be honest with us, even when it was hard to take.
It wasn't that I didn't want someone honest in my life as well, if I ever chose to get married anyway. But he'd need to find a better way of delivering his words if he wanted a chance of sticking around.
Okay, dates, she said, sitting back in her chair and thinking. I was never good at archery, but if there's someone who is skilled at that, it might look nice.
I think I can do that. Oh, and I've already done horseback riding, so that's out.
Right. Cooking, too.
She smiled to herself, as if she couldn't believe I'd allowed that date to happen. And it turned out disastrous.
Well, Kyle and Henry did great, and Fox wasn't terrible.
True, I amended. I found myself thinking about Henry and me cooking alone in the kitchen, the date no one knew about. Sweetheart, I think instead of going for something flashy, you might try simpler dates. Have tea. Take a walk in the gardens. Meals are always a good standard. You can't eat too many times. It might look better than you riding a horse anyway. I'd been trying to avoid anything that might be too personal, but those types of dates gave the impression of closeness, which was something I thought the public wanted. Maybe she was right. If I went in with a list of safe topics and questions, perhaps it wouldn't feel so bad anyway. Thanks, Mom. I'll probably give that a go. Anytime, sweetie. I'm always here for you. I know. I fidgeted with my dress. Sorry if I've been a pain lately. She reached across to me. Edlin, you're under a lot of stress. We understand. And short of becoming an axe murderer, there's nothing you could do to make me love you less. I laughed. An axe murderer? That's your limit? Well, maybe even then. She winked at me. Go on. If you're doing several dates this week, you should make a plan. I nodded, and for reasons I wasn't entirely sure of, scuttled into her lap for a second. Oof, she complained as my weight settled. Love you, Mom. She wrapped her arms around me tightly. I love you too, more than you could ever know. I kissed her cheek and hopped up, thinking of the week ahead, and hoping it would somehow appease everyone. But those thoughts were driven from my mind when I stepped into the hallway and found Baden there, waiting for me. Chapter 29 Baden stood and then crossed the hall. The midday sun was filtering in through the windows, making the space warm and covering everything with a slight hint of yellow. Even his dark skin looked brighter somehow. "Stalking me?" I asked, trying to be playful. The hard set of his eyes told me he wasn't in the mood.
"I wasn't sure how else to get a hold of you. You're so hard to find."
I crossed my arms. "Clearly you're upset. Why don't you tell me what it's all about so we can move on?" He made a face, displeased with my offer.
"I want to leave."
I felt like I'd run full speed into a brick wall. "Excuse me?"
"Last night was embarrassing. I asked you out and you shot me down."
I held up a hand. "I never actually said no. You didn't let me get that far."
"Were you going to say yes?"
He sounded skeptical. I raised my arms and let them drop. "I'll never know, because you got an attitude and walked away."
"Are you seriously going to lecture me on having a bad attitude?"
I gasped. How dare he? I got closer to him, though even at my full height, I was dwarfed by his frame. "You know I could have you punished for speaking to me that way, right?"
"So now you're going to bully me. First, you reject me. Then you use me for a little snippet of entertainment on the report. And now I've had to spend my entire morning tracking you down after you told me you would meet with me during breakfast."
"You're one person out of 20. I have work to do. How self-centered can you possibly be?" His eyes widened, and he pointed at his chest.
"Me? Self-centered?"
I tried to tuck my heart away, refusing to let him hurt me. "You know, you were one of my favorites. I was going to keep you around for a long time. My family liked you, and I admired your talent."
"I don't need your family's stamp of approval. You were nice to me for all of an hour, then you disappear, and it's like nothing happened at all. I have the freedom to leave, and I'm ready to go."
"Then go!" I started walking away. I didn't have to endure that. He yelled down the hall, taking one last stab at me.
"My friends all told me I was crazy to put my name in. They were so right."
I kept going.
"You're pushy. You're selfish. What was I thinking?"
I turned a corner, even though it didn't lead to where I was going. I could find my way eventually. I held it in, keeping the brave face I'd always been taught to have. No one could know how much that hurt. After a trip that took twice as long as it should have, I finally made it to the third floor. I started crying the second I hit the landing, unable to stay composed any longer. Baden's words repeated themselves in my head, and I clutched my stomach, feeling them like literal blows. Before any of the boys had shown up, I'd had a list of ideas for how to get rid of them. I planned on making them so angry they'd say plenty of the things Baden just had. But I'd done nothing to provoke him. And he said them anyway. What was so wrong with me that I got rejected simply for being myself? And his last words did exactly what he wanted them to. It looked like I'd had millions of choices when I drew the names nearly a month ago. How many men hadn't entered because they already objected to me on some level? Did people think I was pushy? Selfish? Which were the public enjoying more? The sweet moments between me and the boys, or the moments when I looked like a failure? I straightened up to head to my room, only to see that Eric was waiting outside my door for me, and had undoubtedly just watched my crying fit. I swiped at my face, trying to clean it up, but there was no hiding the puffy eyes or red cheeks. Eric seeing me like this was almost as bad as the original issue, but the only way to make it seem as if it was nothing was to act as if it was nothing. I walked over to Eric, achingly aware of the sadness in his eyes, and he bowed as I approached. "I feel like maybe I've come at a bad time," he said, the tiniest hint of sarcasm in his voice. I smiled, ever so slightly, I answered, acknowledging my hurt against my better judgment. "Still, I'm happy to help you if I can." Eric pressed his lips together, unsure if he should go on.
"I wanted to talk to you about Henry. He didn't send me," he insisted, holding up a hand. "I think he'd come to you himself if he could speak on his own. But he's embarrassed."
Eric swallowed.
He told me about the kiss."
I nodded. "I figured.
He's afraid he crossed a line. He said something about holding on to you and that he probably should have let go, but then he didn't and..."
I shook my head. "That makes it sound much worse than it was. I stood there, lost. "We were trying to communicate, and when the words didn't work, well, that did." For some reason, I was upset admitting this to Eric, even though he already knew everything.
"So you're not cross with him?"
I heaved out a breath, almost laughing because the idea was so bizarre. "No. He's one of the kindest people I know. I'm not upset with him in the slightest." Eric nodded.
"Would it be all right if I told him as much?"
"Absolutely." I wiped at my eyes again, pulling off smudged eyeliner in the process. "Ugh.
Are you okay, Your Highness?"
His voice was so tender, but mercifully lacking pity. I almost explained what had happened to him, but it was borderline inappropriate. It was one thing to talk about Henry, it was another to discuss the other suitors at length. "I am, or will be. Don't worry about me. Just make sure Henry is all right." His expression changed slightly, and I could see the weight of that roll in his eyes.
"I do my best."
I studied him. "Henry really wants it, doesn't he?" Eric shook his head.
"There is no it. He wants you."
After Baden's heart-shattering speech, it was hard to imagine this was possible. But Eric confirmed it as he went on.
"He talks of you endlessly. Each day in the men's parlor, I'm translating political science books to him, or trying to explain the difference between the absolute monarchy you have here and the constitutional monarchy he grew up with in Swendway. He even..."
Eric paused to chuckle.
"He even studies the way your brothers walk and stand. He wants to be worthy of you in every way."
I swallowed, overcome by this admission. Smirking, trying to dull the feeling, I replied, But he can't even speak to me. I know, he answered solemnly. Which is why I wonder... Wonder what? He rubbed his hand over his mouth, trying to decide if he should continue. It's easiest to learn new languages when you're a child, and it can be taught later in life, but the accent will probably always be bad. Henry simply has a difficult time retaining it. At the rate he's going, it would be years before you'd be able to carry on the most basic conversations. And the nuances of languages, slang and colloquialisms, would take years beyond that. Do you understand what that would mean? That I wouldn't be able to communicate with him for who knew how long. By the time the selection should end, we still would hardly know each other. I do. Two small words, but they felt massive, like they were filling up the entire hallway, crushing me. I just thought you should know that. I wanted you to be aware of what things might look like if you had developed feelings for him, too. Thank you, I breathed. Do you? He asked suddenly. Have feelings for him? I'd been so emotional already that the question sent me into a tailspin. I honestly have no idea how I feel about anything. Hey. He reached out a hand before thinking better of it. I'm sorry. I was being nosy. That's really none of my business, and you're obviously having a rough day. I'm an ass. I wiped at my nose. No. You're trying to be a good friend. To him? To me? It's no big deal. He tucked his hands behind his back. Well, I am, you know? Huh? He sighed, seeming embarrassed. Your friend? If you need one. It was such a simple offer, yet generous in a million ways. I couldn't imagine having a better one. He beamed but was quiet. It seemed like the times when we were silent were some of the easiest. Eventually, he cleared his throat. I'm sure you have work to do, but I hate leaving you alone when you feel so bad. No, I kind of prefer it. Eric gave me a half-hearted smile. If you say so. He bowed. Hope your day gets better. It already has, I promised, walking around him to get into my room, a kind smile on my face. Miss, Nina asked as I came through the doorway. I couldn't imagine how awful I looked. Hi, Nina. Are you all right? Not exactly, but I'll get there. Can you bring me the selection forms, please? I have work to do. Though the confusion on her face was plain, she did as I asked. She also brought a box of tissues. Thank you. I thought I was past the worst of it, but I did tear up again as I looked at the pictures, wondering who was maybe here despite having reservations, and hating each of them on the off chance it applied to them all. Nina, could you get me some paper? Once again she obeyed, bringing a cup of tea along with a notebook. She really was too good. I tried to plot out my week. Apsel's application said he played the piano, so I'd arrange for us to work on duets tomorrow morning. And in the early evening, I'd walk outside with Tavish. Monday would be tea with Gunner, and a photography walk with Harrison. Dad would probably love that. I finished my plans and set down my pile of papers beside me. Without a word, Nina started a bath. I sipped the last of my tea and put the cup back on the table next to the pot so she wouldn't have to go hunting for it later. In the bathroom, steam was filling the air, and I planted myself in front of the mirror, pulling pins out of my hair. Between the soothing water and Nina's calming presence, I was free from most of Baden's harsh words by the time I was ready to dry off. Do you want to talk about it? Nina asked quietly, pulling a brush through my hair. There's not much to say. People will throw food at me. People will throw words at me. And I have to be stronger than that if I'm going to survive. She let out a disapproving sound, and I watched her troubled eyes in the mirror. What? Nina stopped brushing for a minute, looking at my reflection. For all my problems, I'd never trade them for yours. I'm so sorry. I pulled myself up. Nothing to be sorry for. This was what I was born to do. That's not fair, though, is it? I thought eliminating the castes meant that no one was born into anything. Does that apply to everyone except you?
Apparently.
It didn't matter that Apsel's skills were so good I praised him endlessly, and it didn't matter that the photos of Tavish and me in the garden were positively beautiful. With all the work I put in, neither of those things were headline material Monday morning. Above the pictures of me and my dates was an entirely different story. "It's work," screamed the headline above a candid shot of me yawning. An exclusive source had shared that I felt the selection process was more work than anything, and that we make it look exciting. All I could think about was how badly I wanted to hurt Mila Warren. I couldn't blame her completely, though. Baden's expose on how staged the selection was helped nothing. He described me at length as frigid, two-faced, and distant. He spoke of our one charming moment alone, and then my intentional disconnection from him, and said there was no way he could have stayed in the palace, living under such a lie. I knew it was likely that he was paid an exorbitant amount of money for his story, and that he was probably worrying about a mountain of debt for his education, but I felt certain he would have said it all for free. Juxtaposing those stories with the one of my weekend dates cheapened everything about them. It was a waste of effort, and worse, it was visibly taking a toll on Dad. Weeks had passed. He still had no idea how to address the caste issues, and pockets of rioters were calling for the end of the monarchy. I was failing in every possible way. After breakfast, I went to my room, looking at my plans for the day. Were they worthless now? Was there a way to make these dates better? I heard a knock and turned to see Kyle standing at the door. I ran into his arms without a second thought.
"Hey,"
he said, holding me tight.
"I don't know what to do. Everything's just getting worse and worse."
He pulled back and lowered his eyes to meet mine.
"Some of the guys are confused. They don't know if they're being used, Edlin."
He continued in a whisper, presumably so Nina wouldn't hear his words.
"I know our first kiss was for show. Is it all for show? If it is, you need to come clean."
I stared into his eyes. How had I ever thought he was anything less than smart and funny and handsome and kind? I didn't want to respond in a whisper, so I signaled for Nina to leave. And once she had closed the door behind her, I faced him again. "It's complicated, Kyle."
"I'm a very intelligent person. Explain."
His words were calm, an invitation more than a demand. "If you had asked me the night before everyone came, I would have said it was all a joke. But it's not anymore. Not to me." The words shocked me. I'd fought caring about these boys, and I was still terrified of them getting closer. Even now, Kyle was walking the edge of my comfort zone, and I was unsure how I'd manage if he pushed himself over the line. "You matter to me," I confessed. "A lot of you do. But do I think I'll get married?" I shrugged. "I can't say."
"That doesn't make sense. Either you want this or you don't."
"That's not fair. When your name was called, did you want to participate? Would you say the same thing now?"
I didn't realize how tense he'd become until he let out a breath and closed his eyes.
"Okay, I can understand that."
"It's been harder than I thought, with so many disasters along the way. And I'm not as good at showing my emotions as other girls, so it comes across like I don't care, even when I do. I like to keep things to myself. It looks bad, I know, but it's real."
He'd been around me long enough to know it was true.
"You need to address this. You need to say something publicly about that story,"
he insisted, his eyes focused on mine. I rubbed my temple. "I'm not sure that's a good idea. What if I somehow make it worse?" He poked my stomach, something we hadn't done since we were children.
How can the truth make anything worse?
Well, that confirmed all my anxieties. Admitting how much this meant to me now might also mean owning up to the origins of this particular selection. With the way things were going, that wouldn't win me any sympathy. He turned me around and pointed me toward my table and chairs.
Here, let's sit for a minute.
I sat beside him, piling up some of the dress ideas I had been working on.
Those are impressive, Edlin,
he remarked. I gave him a weak smile. Thank you, but it's really just a bunch of scribbles.
Don't do that,
he said.
Don't make it seem like it's not important.
I remembered those words, and they soothed me. Kyle pulled over a handful of the pencils and started some sketches of his own. What are you drawing? I asked, looking at the little boxes.
An idea I've been experimenting with.